All right. Live PBJ, baby.
You ready?
Let's rock and roll.
We had to wait for you because DK and I are going to ask you a lot of questions.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, you know, for Presidio Bitcoin Jam is our weekly show that we do out of the studio next door. And we're all Bitcoiners. And we kind of just hang out and talk about the stuff that we're excited about or learning about that week. And it's often fairly Bitcoin oriented, but it's not exclusively Bitcoin oriented. Sometimes we talk about sports. Weather.
Well, we talk about sports, but we talk about Sana.
But today, you know, I think we've just finished this, you know, kind of at the closing capstone of the day and of the, you know, day and a half. And Max, you've spent the last basically, you know, what, 36 hours hosting panels and driving the discussion. And so now's the time for us to turn the tables and sort of ask you questions and you know, to kind of start it off, I'll kick it off, which is like, what do you feel like you've learned new by sort of having, you know, gathering all these people, getting all these people together and asking some of your smartest friends your best questions?
Yeah, it was just so awesome. So first of all, for anyone who's listening and you don't know, we just had the Type 1 Summit. The thesis of Type 1 Summit is on the Kardashev scale. We want to figure out how we can harvest all the energy touching our sun. I'm excited. I met someone I wasn't expecting who's building a Dyson sphere. So next year we'll have the Type 2 Summit, and that's going to be really awesome as well. And we'll definitely chat about that. You know, honestly, this event was so much fun. I have to thank you guys. Y'all believed in the vision when everyone thought it was crazy. I have to give another giant shout out to Alex. I don't know where Alex is. Is he still in the room? Oh, well, we'll give him another shout out when he comes back because he hustled his ass off to make this work. And yeah, I mean, I have also just been, you guys know, like grinding, making sure we got the right people in here. And it exceeded my wildest expectations. Like, man, like it is such a pleasure to have great minds convene. And like, it's beautiful. Like it's, you know, oftentimes I feel like we feel like this is Bitcoiners or people that are like solar maxis. It's like, you're like this like weirdo on the internet and you're like, no, why doesn't everyone see what I see? And then to hear people that have like seen what you see, but have seen many steps beyond, you're just like, oh, this is wonderful. It's I don't know. So I'm really grateful for the way this all came together. In terms of things I learned and things I changed my mind on, I mean, I'll start by saying I am more convinced of ever of just like, just bet the curves. I think even in preparing my own sort of little presentation, listening to Mez, and I've listened to that dude for like 15 years, but to see him just like hit and show slide after slide after slide after slide of like, things get cheaper, things get cheaper, things get cheaper, solar gets cheaper, batteries get cheaper. It just kind of reinforced a lot of what I already believed on that. By the way, Alex just walked in the room. Alex, since you're using the bathroom, I wanted to say huge fucking shout out to you again for anyone listening. Let's give him Alex a round of applause. I can say this man has been working his ass off for many weeks to get this shit together, and he 12 out of 10. So kudos to you, my friend.
Hell yeah.
Well, I think we're gonna have a little comment.
My wife's excited for me not to be married to you for 3 months.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, if I got to be married to some dude, I'm glad it's you. Don't plan to do that, but glad it's you, bro. Anyways, no, but seriously, you did a phenomenal job. Really appreciate you putting all that hard effort to make this work. So some things that I learned that are new. One thing that I maybe changed my mind on slightly is seeing Mez talk about some of the fusion curves. Like, I'm pretty skeptical in nuclear. Like, I've always just been like, I joked, and this is like horribly offensive, so apologies to anyone listening, but that we're gonna have a nuclear panel is gonna be like my DEI panel or whatever. Like, I know it's really offensive and horrible, but like, I just don't believe in nuclear. I don't believe the cost curves. I don't think it makes sense. But hearing Mez and watching him do some of these cost curve stuff and showing that actually there are breakthroughs in fusion, okay, I'm open to it. My response, I come back and say, well, we have the greatest reactor of all time and it's free and it's right up in the sky. So let's start with that and we can go much further. But hearing Mez, who's someone I respect deeply, taking nuclear more seriously. Now, I think even once it starts working, you still have to bring it down the cost curves. And I think that's going to take probably way longer than anyone expects. But my guess is that maybe 10 plus years out, maybe we no longer need solar. And I'm open, and Casey's mentioned this before, to a world where, let's say, we cover the whole planet ever in solar panels, and then we get rid of those solar panels when we have really efficient nuclear. Okay, I'm okay with that. I think it's awesome. I'm still skeptical, but I would say I'm more open-minded on nuclear today than I was when I started. So that's a big learning. Some other things I learned, there's so many. I mean, just the panels, like getting really great people to like riff together. It's like watching jazz, you know? And so it was just so fucking cool. Like yesterday, the panel on the Platonic ideal of the grid and thinking about Hayek and free markets and how far this could go. I mean, I need to rewatch that three times. I showed this to Anjali, and we both decided some of John's ideas were so above our head. It looked like Greek to us. And I was like, okay, I need to really go back and understand all the derivatives and products they want to build. But I would highly encourage, hopefully we're going to put some of that content out on YouTube for people to watch all the panels, but that one really blew my mind. And I think I'm increasingly convinced that, like basically just like spot price for electricity can solve more than we think. So those are some things. Two things from today that changed my mind on, or very salient, top of mind for me. Three things. One, man, Casey Hanover is smart. Like I knew he was, but the more I listened to that guy, I was talking to Anjali about it. It's just like, it sounds like you're listening to Elon Musk. And I don't think I've ever said that about anyone else in my entire life. Like, I believe in that dude. So that's one. Number two, man, there's so many things. The space panel, I think, like to see serious space players get interested in mining Bitcoin in space. After talking to Calvin and Bob, that was really cool and interesting to me. And thinking and seeing them realize that Bitcoin mining can perhaps subsidize and bring down the cost of launch, like that clearly clicked for them. That was very cool. I think the last panel with Bob was important. I think, he's someone I greatly respect. So when he sounds the alarm, like maybe there is a bit of a bubble, like I'm listening to it. I still think my intuition is scaling laws, Jevons paradox, but that was interesting. Just so much. It was awesome. What about you guys? Well, what did y'all ask me? Let me put you on the spot. What did you learn?
We're going to keep asking you questions.
Oh, okay. Wait, sorry. One last thing I want to mention. It was also so cool. Shout out to Garth. I think he was in the room. He may have already left. He did a great panel yesterday and brought Shrep, who is the former CTO of Meta. And first of all, hearing former CTO of Meta just say the words Bitcoin here, like that was really cool. And hearing him be open-minded to some of this, like what sounded crazy, like building a terawatt scale, like I thought most of big tech was too sclerotic to even consider what we're saying. And I've changed my mind on that.
We're going to create a video clip of Shrep doing that and play that over and over.
Assuming he says it's okay. We got to get him to sign off on that. Yeah.
What about Max? What about like as you're creating this event, you talked about terawatt scale. So I'm curious, going into the event, what did you see as the timelines and probability of that happening? How has that changed over the last 2 days?
I think it's gone up for sure. I mean, I think you heard Casey say it when I asked, can you do this? And his answer was just yes. I think, as I was preparing my own slide, like if scaling laws of compute continue, right? And so we're, the frontier models are using about 5x more compute on average per year right now. And so power, because of efficiency, let's just call it 2-ish gigawatts. If that a factor of 2x, maybe 2.5x, if you just keep scaling that out, we're going to need, for frontier training runs, like 5 gigawatts by 2030-ish. And we're already seeing companies do that, right? Like you see Elon's definitely doing that. You're seeing Meta, committing to multiple gigawatts, Google, same thing. So I think that makes total sense to me. And so if you're like, well, there's going to be multiple companies doing this and China is doing this. So I think we'll be on the order of like 50 to 100 gigawatts by 2030. And by the way, I think it's like, and I said this, and I'm going to say this one more time so everyone hears me. Whoever, I asked Casey, why aren't we seeing solar and storage off-grid multiple gigawatt scale yet, if the math works? And we heard all these answers, it's land, it's this, and then by Charge Robotics, that also blew my mind, the guy that's building robots to install solar panels, super long on that company, holy crap, that's cool too. But hearing Casey say that, I mean, his answer was so right. He said, we just need one psychopath. And I mean that, like you need someone who's so crazy, they're willing to chew the glass, they're willing to do all the bullshit that's necessary, and that's what we need. And if that psychopath is you who wants to build terawatt solar grids, like please call me, I want to invest in you. Like that's what we need. But there's nothing in physics that says it can't happen. And if you just follow the scaling laws, if we have multiple companies in China all doing at least 5 gigawatts just for the training runs, and then there's inference, we're going to be in the order of like 50 to 100 gigawatts in just like compute for training and inference by 2030. And so if you just keep running that out, a couple more doubles, it's like, well, we're going to need a terawatt by the early 2030s, in my mind. And so, and when people are like, well, we'll do other things. Well, nuclear is not going to be ready. generators and gas turbines are completely sold out. So I think solar and batteries is the only option to get that. And I think it hasn't hit most people, but it will. And so when that happens, I've increased my confidence that we're going to hit terawatt scale solar by the mid 2030s at least.
And how do you think the you know, there's a bunch of different ways that that could come to be. So it could be ushered in by a new technology or somebody who's, you know, willing to chew glass and build that company, the psychopath. It could be by, you know, say like the hyperscalers that already have huge capital, huge balance sheets, big demands for energy. It could come from some regulatory changes that enable things that are already invented to finally be deployable. Do you have a sense of like, you know, what does it take to get there? Which of those, I mean, certainly there's people trying in each of those paths, but is there one of those that you find most compelling or most promising as sort of a path for us to get there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably going to be all of the above, but there will probably be something that like outweighs the others. If I had to guess, like if I guess who's going to do this and you said, you know, whatever, put a gun in my head, like make your prediction right now, it's going to be Elon. And it's just going to be Elon that figures out the right slide roundabout ways. Other people are going to probably enable that. And I would love for it to be an entrepreneur, like maybe all of us back, and that would be really cool, but that's probably going to be Elon. And I think, you know, he's going to have to do all of those things. And like, I mean, right now, this is not like whatever, probably kosher, but like right now, like what he's doing in like, you know, in Memphis, which is where I'm from, where he's building the biggest data centers. And then, you know, across, like everyone's like, well, he doesn't have any power generation there. It's like, well, it turns out it's all in South Haven, Mississippi, which is right across the border. Very intimately familiar with this border. And, you know, he's just like running a line. It's like, is that legal? I don't know. But like, he's doing it.
What's happening? He's got a power generation somewhere and what he's running a line across.
So he's creating the power in South Haven, Mississippi, and the training runs are being done in Memphis, Tennessee. But everyone from South Haven is basically from Memphis. Like when we have basketball players, like DJ Jeffries was from South Haven, then he comes to Memphis. And anyways, there's a long history
like
of players.
Is that like a jurisdictional arbitrage?
That's exactly what it is. Exactly what it is. So you,
I just want to appreciate the segue to Memphis basketball players.
Of course. You know, we got to always do it for them, baby. So I think it's going to be all the above, and it's probably going to be that really clever, driven, I mean, psychopath has a negative connotation, but clever, driven entrepreneur that figures out all those pieces. In terms of technology, I mean, so I think it was interesting. We did this panel on how do we get to terawatt scale, and I think there are kind of like three things that kept coming up as challenges. One is just belief, and that's where you need the person that just believes, a Casey, an Elon, someone like that. But then there are, I think, three major limiting factors. One is you need the land itself. Now, to get that land and to get it, it's an arguable how contiguous the land needs to be, right? And I think that depends on if it's for, yeah, I mean, it depends on like how you're doing the training runs or whatever, but like, let's say it needs to be roughly contiguous. Then it comes down to like, you need basically the quants to figure out which data you get. And so there's companies here, Kyle and his company at Paces is doing this. We had some other folks yesterday that are working on similar ideas. The agentic infrastructure guys, extremely impressed with them. They're also basically like doing like financing things. They're building models to figure out what land to acquire. So you need to like have the big brains, the quants, tell you what land to acquire. Then you need the cowboys, the landmen, to actually go out there and knock on the doors, negotiate the land. That's a very different skill set, right? Like you're talking like the autists with cowboys, and they need to be paired together. So that's like, that's a special company or thing that you put together. Then you need the capital, right? And so the capital is the second limiting constraint. And you know, the order of magnitude we're talking, I did the back of the envelope math, right? And so to get to a terawatt scale of contiguous solar, roughly, and again, don't quote me on this because I said yesterday I did this in a Waymo, so like I haven't checked my numbers. But you need like 20 million acres, and you know, Arizona is like 70 million acres or 75 million acres. So you're talking like roughly a third of Arizona to do this, which really is not that much. And in the grand scheme of things. And so, but you still, that's a lot of land to go and just like knock on doors and buy it one by one, parcel by parcel. So, you know, the capital though was a lot. If you wanted to do data centers with current cost, the solar, the batteries, I think my back of the envelope math of that was in the order of like tens of trillions of dollars, which, you know, the global GDP is on the order of like 100 plus trillion dollars. So it's, you know, it's possible, but it's like a, like half of global GDP or something to pull that off today. Now it's hard to make that prediction because, you know, the data centers are going to get cheaper to build, the solar is going to get cheaper, the batteries, and it's going to happen over multiple decades. It's not going to happen at once, right? And so it's hard to predict what that actually is, but like you need access to a lot of capital. That's for sure. And there are funds that, you know, infrastructure funds that are going deeper on this, but they're sort of like, order of magnitude of capital is probably not high enough. I think that probably states will have to get involved to get to that level, maybe. But I also think another two interesting things we haven't discussed is one other possibility is we made this discussion a few episodes ago that one of the big kind of like elephants in the room that people don't realize is somewhere between $100,000 and $1 million per Bitcoin, the majority of the world's billionaires are Bitcoiners, came from Bitcoin wealth. And so those are like, I think once you have like, more Bitcoin wealth, understands energy, frankly, is more cowboy, willing to take more risk. Maybe some of these guys are going to be the ones to underwrite what otherwise sound like nutty job, you know, projects. And so I think that's another way that Bitcoin's going to overlap with this.
So yesterday,
can I add one more thing that's super important? In terms of the technology, though, the thing I want to say that really impressed me is Charge Robotics. And there's probably other companies doing this, but he convinced me, Banks, that the biggest limiting factor is labor, and you just can't get enough people to build all this fast enough. So if you can get robots that can lay panels sufficiently fast, I think that's the single biggest technological barrier we need.
That's definitely a learning for us, at least. Yesterday, we talked about ocean, using energy from the ocean. Curious what your learnings from that are, and we talked before about Bitcoin being this sort of like frontier, like it's the first use of energy in a brand new location. Like I traveled to rural Kenya to go see a site from Gridless, and it was super cool to see that live. Do we think the ocean is it a good match for Bitcoin being a pioneer, and then ultimately other uses of that power?
Yeah, so that's another learning. I came away, I was already bullish on Punta Lasa. You know, I'm stoked to be an investor in that company. And I'm more bullish on them than I was yesterday, listening to Garth, listening to Shrep talk about all this. Basically, what Garth said that like blew me away is he was like, there's like on the order of 10 to maybe 15 terawatts that he could potentially harvest in the ocean. That's a lot more than I realized. Like, so that's a lot. I was still somewhat skeptical, and to some degree still have some skepticism that anything will compete with solar plus storage coming down the cost curve, like sub 3 cents kilowatt hour. But I think the more I've learned about where their technology is and where it can go, I think it can be, you know, even if it's not beating solar and storage on its own, it can be close enough or in the same ballpark. But then when you factor in the total cost of compute and data centers, things like cooling, right? Like it made a lot of sense to me. It's like, well, yeah, if you're in the ocean and that, you know, that cuts a lot of the cost you need from the data center piece through the cooling. Not to mention you have, you know, 95%+ capacity factor. Like basically it's always out there producing electricity. I think there's a lot of opportunity. I think that company is going to do, and people working on similar technologies, really well. We didn't talk about actually having solar panels at sea, but I know that's something China is doing as well. I don't know a ton about it, but I find that interesting. Would like to learn more.
Are they doing it like experimentally right now, or that's kind of like a big,
I actually don't know.
Deployment?
I'm actually not sure. I just saw a photo. I'm seeing people nodding their head that I grabbed in my presentation because I thought it looked pretty wild, but I don't know much on it. And sorry, I didn't answer your question. So Garth, I don't know how much he went into this, but he's definitely sympathetic to the Bitcoin views for sure. And they've already mined Bitcoin at Pentless. So they've already kind of used this as a demonstration. We've seen, you know, on our Bitcoiner panel, we've seen over and over the people that are killing it in AI right now, we're doing this first.
But I think maybe I misunderstood or misinterpreted, but it sounded to me like he started with that and then moved to another application. And I didn't get the impression that Bitcoin's going to, he's going to use it again for a new frontier is more of a one-time experiment.
Well, I think it was a one-time experiment at first. And I think the way to think about all this is, you know, Bitcoin is the buyer of last resort, and markets will form and tell you what the buyer of first resort is. Today it's AI. It may not always be AI, right? There might be other uses like synthetic fuels or something that's, you know, at certain points in human history, maybe more valuable. But I think, you know, he's very interested in the long run. Like, I think there's many reasons you might want to consider. For example, you might have, you know, some ASICs on there, you know, like maybe there's, I don't know, like a period where you're refueling the GPUs and you want to like, or whatever, like there's some period where you don't have the compute there. And like, while you're waiting, you know, you always just have ASICs built in. I think that, you know, the other thing that I think people are frankly kind of ignoring is like, look, AI is like, you know, the pretty girl at the prom right now, but it's not always that way. I mean, we've all lived through going through Bitcoin bull runs where all of a sudden we just like 17x'd real quick. And so I think that, you know, as Bitcoin hash rate continues to grow, and like there will be other periods of time where we're not like, we build a lot of what we need for the AI bull run, and then Bitcoin's going to boom again. And I think people also want like diversity in what their customer base is. So I think there's many reasons they'll continue that, but I do expect AI to continue to be the buyer first resort.
That's when the last point you made was something Margot mentioned to me after her panel, which is like she's happy to sell to anyone. She doesn't have to like go all in on any, you know, Bitcoin or AI or whatever. She's just building a base technology that can serve all of those customers.
I think that's what Garth would say too.
Cool. As we think about sort of like the kinds of companies that are already, like, we met a bunch of entrepreneurs who are already building things. You've got at least one idea that you think is a big gap that you want to find a psychopath for. Is there like a stable
an
of these?
An ethical psychopath, by the way. I want to be clear. We use this.
Are there a stable of other ideas or opportunities that you sort of maybe have already been stewing on, or that maybe have sort of come to light as part of the discussions that happened here?
Oh, definitely. And I should, like, I think I need to process all this, and I should put like out an RFP for all the things I want to fund right now. Or incubate. I've got a lot.
Request for psych.
Yeah, exactly. Request for psychopaths. Hey, well, Dyson Sphere is on the list. So I don't know if you put yourself in that category or not, but enough. I think a couple of the ideas that jumped to mind immediately, and again, I want to think more about this, but you know, I love the space idea that Bob and Calvin were talking about, where you can basically, you know, we've talked a lot about where we actually going to see Bitcoin payments take off. I think the energy industry is clearly one area. Once Square turns on Bitcoin, obviously more consumer stuff, agents. But I think, yeah, like this idea of like space services, like we've talked about like selling bandwidth storage and compute for sats. I think maybe space is the place that makes a lot of sense, because you have like a bunch of different satellites from China, from the US, from, you know, whatever. And they need instant final settlement, which Lightning supports, and they need it to be neutral because it's not one country. So I think that's interesting as we start to see like more move away from US hegemony. Like Bitcoin in space actually is like, I don't know, like I started off kind of like 2 weeks ago like, man, this sounds crazy. Then a week ago I was like, man, maybe let's get these guys on the panel. Today I'm like, actually sounds pretty damn good. We need to think more about this. So I'm more increasingly bullish on Bitcoin space for payments and for mining. Definitely someone just to go out there and like do the hard work of acquiring the land, you know, building solar. Yeah, definitely like what Charge is doing, like robots to put out solar panels. I think that's for sure. I'm interested. I don't know, as a business, I mean, Casey called it a philanthropic project. There's someone I didn't get to talk to that I want to chat with. I know a lot of people are saying his ideas are interesting around desal. I think desalination water and terraforming desert. That's interesting to me. I don't know as a business, but I think it's really cool for the world. I'm sure there's a ton of, I mean, there's another company that like, I'll give you an idea. As the grid becomes more of a market, whether we build a new one and subsume the old one or develop it on top of the old market, I think it's like you can basically just look at like who's done well in traditional markets. Like we've talked about, like I want to fund the Jane Street of the grid. And I think whoever owns the most sort of like virtual power plant, virtual battery, whoever owns the biggest virtual battery is going to be in the position to like basically set prices on the grid. And so I want to invest in whoever's building the biggest virtual battery. I wish I'd known them. I didn't, but Base Power is obviously doing that famously in Texas. That's cool. I still am somewhat skeptical on them going bottoms up resi. I think they're going to kill it. But bottoms up resi, just having done bottoms up resi solar for many, many years. Yeah, exactly. Chandra Shaper, like, man, it's horrible. And, you know, customer acquisition is horrible. And like, even the best guys, like, you know, Elon famously, you know, people are like, oh, he acquired SolarCity. Like, it was a bailout. He bailed out his cousins at SolarCity because it's so damn hard to do customer acquisition at the resi scale. And even now with Tesla, like, you know, that home stuff today still, I'm not super bullish. I'm more bullish on their industrial scale. It doesn't mean it can't work. And I think that's a team that could make it work. But now I'm more interested in like, okay, who's going to kind of do like base power, but like with these giant gigawatt scale farms, aggregate them with a lot of batteries. I want to invest in that. If that's you, that's what I want to invest in.
Well, most of your investing, at least historically, has been kind of venture capital style, right?
Yeah.
And it seems like some of these projects, when they're infrastructure-y and they acquire assets and stuff, there might almost be like a different style because you actually have assets at the end of the thing, even if like the core idea didn't work out. So does that evolve from a style of investing, or does it still kind of look mostly like venture?
Well, as our buddy Rhodes said, he told me I need to get up here and tell her when I'm raising a fund, particularly on infrastructure. In case the SEC is listening, I'm not, in fact, announcing that fund. but it's a good idea. And yeah, I don't know, man. Like I need to think more about this. I don't have a great answer for you. I mean, I'm still a baby fund. I don't plan to scale a ton, but I want to invest in a lot more of these companies.
You could also find partners, right?
Yeah.
Who are into debt financing and share the vision, and then they partner with you and you still focus on venture.
100%. And I think that's kind of what I'm doing right now, is like I've been, you know, very fortunate to have, you know, LPs from funds like Founders Fund and Ribbit and stuff like this. Like I would love to let those guys, like I love being early cowboy and I want to let those guys run. I think in order, to your point, to really scale this, I would love to be able to partner with more of the project finance, because even those guys can't play. I mean, they're not project finance runs, right? You need like the Blue Owls of the world. You need, you know, the TPGs. Like, these guys have real balance sheets and underwrite infrastructure. I don't plan to ever do that. But at the same time, it also doesn't mean that, you know, I don't have a strong opinion on how to structure all this yet, because, you know, maybe they do want to keep a lot of this stuff on their balance sheet. Maybe it needs to be like two different entities, but like, you want to be the owner of the battery, because then once you own that, then you can do all these other things on top of it. So I don't know.
But just the battery itself would have some residual value, so it could be financed via debt or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it probably will.
So if you're going to stick Cowboy Venture, you know, what does that look like? Is it, are there like traditional seed type investment opportunities to come up?
So there definitely are, right? So like, to be clear, and this is changing over time, but like, you know, when I was on the founding team of this company, Bright, which is like, you know, Sunrun, like, we raised a $4 million seed, and then we raised a whole bunch of project finance. And like, I would like to be the guy, ideally, the $500K pre-seed. And then like, that's like Satoshi Energy. Like, their first round was very tiny. And then over time, they've raised more and more and more, and then project finance. But yeah, I mean, like, look, I'm not going to say, you actually changed my mind on something yesterday in the sauna. We snuck away and did a sauna briefly.
What was my invite?
Well, I was just walking by myself, and then I ran into him and Rhodes, and DK's face gleefully lit up like a child. When I said, hey, do you want to go to the sauna? DK went, yes!
Hell yeah.
you were very excited. It turns out DK had been like secretly planning a trip to the sauna.
I was going to do it anyway, but I was like, well, I want to be supportive of Max and be around the place. And then he's like, let's go sauna. I was like, of course.
Anyways, I needed a break. I forgot. What was the question? Where were we going with that?
We were talking about sort of how the financing of these things might work, how venture-like.
Well, you changed my mind on something yesterday. So, you know, we've talked about this a little bit. DK and his wife have a fund, Founders You Should Know, which is really awesome. And, you know, you've made the point to me that it's more interesting to be able to invest in the best companies, whatever the stage. I've always been kind of like, well, I want to be there at the very beginning. And I still do. I mean, that's the most fun stage to me. That's when, you know, cowboys, you can like help people whiteboard. But like, I've certainly changed my mind, you know, without naming names, there are a couple of companies where I'm like, look, take my money. I don't, any cat, I don't care. Like, I just, this is the one, like, be in it no matter what. And I'm not going to turn those down. So yeah, I mean, I think I would be, say I'm increasingly more stage agnostic. And I, you know, I joked like, yeah, man, like when I saw Crusoe at the Bean, I was like, well, I love Chase, but like, this is flared gas and like, they're not in electricity. Man, I don't know. I was so, so wrong. And I don't want to do that again.
Probably still 100X.
Yeah, let's not talk about it.
I have a question. So like, about 5 years ago is when you collaborated with Square on a, you know, project and paper. And like, one of the theses there was that, you know, Bitcoin could make energy projects more economically viable.
Yeah.
Over a dinner conversation last night, with someone that who just bought a bunch of land. And I was talking about, is this something that you're entertaining? And they didn't think so. More because they were going to find an operator who would build out the solar and wind and wait for actual like grid connectivity approval before doing that. I'm curious, have your views changed on that at all? And then second question is, for things that are off the grid, does that change the equation?
And are you talking specifically Bitcoin mining or just like building solar for anything?
Well, I mean, I'm up here about Bitcoin, so I'm specifically curious about Bitcoin. But you can, you know, the same question of even like batteries or any other, any tool to make it economically more viable.
Yeah. Well, I think the TLDR is, if you can get cheap enough batteries, like, we do have one data point to prove this works, and that's the Crusoe Redwood Materials project. I think Kyle said it was 1 megawatt. I thought it was 12 megawatts. I don't know if Kyle's still in the room or Brock. Anyway, okay. Well, anyways, I don't know exactly what the scale is, but let's say it's on the order of megawatts. I mean, that's as far as I can tell. I don't know the internal economics of that, but I'm pretty sure it pencils if they did it. And the key for them, of course, is they're using recycled batteries, because Redwood Materials takes like old Tesla batteries and then recycles them. So I think we have a proof point, and now you're going to see that. You know, I think you're going to see more and more people do that. And I would argue that like, that's the first example of, we cross the threshold, it works. And now for new batteries, maybe not exactly there yet, but maybe, you know, I don't know, give it a couple months, or a year. In terms of the Bitcoin mining, I think Tomas, who was here, I don't think he's still here anymore. He's really the one that opened my eyes on that. Something else that really, I don't know if it changed my mind, but you know, he also was doing kind of Crusoe stuff, flared gas in Argentina, but now he's looking at more electricity and mining with Bitcoin. And he told me that for the first time ever, you know, internally it penciled for them to do this. So I literally think it was like we were 5 to 6 years too early, and like we're literally crossing the, over the next year, you're going to see more and more data points. And then over the next 3 years, you're just going to see it go like that.
Cool. Well, my experience kind of coming to this and being a part of it is that I got to meet a lot of great people and learned a lot of stuff about a topic area that I'm not otherwise super deep in. I was kind of surprised that a lot of the energy people didn't have as much opinion about Bitcoin as I might have guessed they would. Just feels like as Bitcoiners, we sort of talk about the energy industry a lot, and some energy people are kind of deep into it. But I wonder, like, is there anything related to how the energy industry and Bitcoin interplay works that kind of has shifted from what we heard or learned today?
Well, it just, the first thing that comes to mind is like the meme of like San Francisco talking about NYC and be like, you guys are awful. And NYC is like, I never think about you. Like, it's probably that. Like, I mean, the reality is we've been, you know, a niche weird thing for a long time, and the energy industry is kind of what moves the world. I would say the biggest thing that came out of this for me is, I beat this 1,000 times, but I will continue to beat it, is like how much I despise crypto. And the reason is I just like these fuckers have made our life so hard where it's like with Casey, where I'm trying to have a serious conversation. It's like, crypto scam. Like, listen, no one hates cryptocurrency more than me. Like literally no one on the planet. Bitcoin only. It's energy backed money. We have nothing to do with them. We don't even want, like, they're always trying to associate with it. We have nothing to do with them whatsoever. Once I really explained to
them, they're across the street. Actually.
Yeah, like honestly, and like it's just so frustrating because it's like, you know, for so many people that are really smart like Casey, I did see some wheels turning with him, but it's so frustrating because, you know, you don't start from zero with everyone. Instead, you start with, oh, you guys are probably scammers. And it's like, listen, anyways, it's a long process to get them there. But when you explain this is energy money, it has nothing to do with crypto at all. Eventually, I started to see the wheels turning. Now, the good news is, you know, Casey was one of the ones that maybe was a little bit more, unfortunately, had a association with Bitcoin and crypto. A lot of people I talked with in energy just didn't know. And so if someone's starting at zero, I love that. Or they're like, oh, Bitcoin, I can't hear about that. I hear some cowboys that made some money in Texas. Tell me more. That's great. And I would say the majority of people I talked to were in that camp. And, you know, I won't say that my, you know, sort of like fundamental reason for doing this conference was to orange pill the energy industry, but I won't say that. And I would say mission accomplished from stage zero. So.
Well, yeah, I think it's been nice to get a bunch of energy people in here because I think it is very relevant to Bitcoin and Bitcoin's future, but this is obviously not a sales pitch for Bitcoin. This is just trying to kind of learn from everybody.
Well, my point is, like, smart people come in with open minds. They'll reach the conclusions on their own.
Yep.
One of the audience, someone in that, I think it was the matcha guy, had a question. about Bitcoin becoming like the currency for energy trade. And I forget who the panelist was that answered kind of in the negative, but
that was Casey, right?
Yeah. So maybe based on past being burnt or something, but
I think it's something like that.
But you know, we're all three Bitcoiners and probably believe in that future. But what, you know, what are our thoughts on that? And what kind of time, like what has to happen for that to be unlocked? Even if you're bullish, like it obviously is. It's probably not going to happen tomorrow. So what's going to unlock that?
Well, I'll answer that in two ways. I mean, I think it's like we talk a lot about on the show of like, if you think about how monetary good evolves, right? It's collectible, you know, store value, medium of exchange, unit of account. And it's not like it's a perfect line. It's like spiky. It's like you get little bits of things all along the way. So one thing I would say is Bitcoin is not done monetizing, right? If you're crazy like us, like Michael Saylor, you think Bitcoin's going to well over $10 million a coin, that'll probably take a decade. Once it does, like eventually, you know, we've made this point. I forgot, actually we were in a chat with Mark about this and I forgot exactly what's his point. Cause originally we said, look, once Bitcoin monetizes, instead of going up 2% a year or like inflation, the monetary supply, it's like you get 2% a year deflation or whatever the GDP growth rate is. And Bitcoin literally just tracks your GDP. And then I forgot, well, what was Mark's point? He said, not GDP, but Do you remember this?
I remember the combo and I forget his point, but we all agreed with his point.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to remember now.
None of us remember.
I think the gist was the difference of flows and stores. And so he says GDP is not the best way to model this. Anyways, Mark, if you're listening, you can elucidate us further. But
the TLDR is it's higher than GDP.
The TLDR is. Once Bitcoin is done going through this once in a species, as Jesse Meyer says, monetization process, which is why it's such a special opportunity, then all of a sudden it just becomes this really boring thing that just like more or less tracks the growth rate of human progress, however you want to measure that.
Which is what everybody tries to do when they try to buy like VOO or VT or some sort of like index of global wealth creation.
Exactly.
Right? I'm not trying to beat the market. I'm just trying to like be the market.
Bitcoin is the market at that point.
At some long term in the future. But because there's risk to does it get there and how long does it take to get there, that's heavily discounted.
Right.
Today.
But your point, Bitcoin has to mature to some further point. Yeah. Before it would be used for trade. But like what would – I mean the neutrality of Bitcoin I think is interesting. I think like countries that hold Bitcoin in reserves, that could be an unlock as well, you know, being even able to trade and able and willing to trade.
Yeah, totally. But I mean and so my point on that was yes, but also that it's spiky, right? It's like Bitcoin was a medium of exchange on Silk Road. Because it needed to be. That was the only thing there. And that was, and then, you know, so it's not like it's like, oh, pure store of value, then medium exchange. It's going to be like Square turns on merchants now. It's a little bit more medium exchange here. But one area where I know this is happening is Austin still in the audience from Sonoda? No, Austin's not here right now. Austin gave me some really interesting data points because he works with a lot of miners and he also does settlement of Bitcoin for electrons. And, you know, I don't know how much data I can reveal, so I'll let Austin speak for himself. But like TLDR over time, the percentage, so he offers the miners that he works with, miners that are working with generation sites, the choice to settle in Bitcoin or to settle in dollars. And over time, it is a clear growth trend for miners that want to settle in Bitcoin or to pay their bills in Bitcoin rather, the other way around. And that's because obviously they already have Bitcoin, they understand Bitcoin, it's easier, there's less friction, there's less conversion. And so I actually do expect the energy industry as mining, whether or not people are Bitcoiners, maybe they're just like, hey, there's this like free money printer, go burr. And I can hook it up with my compute sites and my solar farms and all this stuff. You know, it's like the same reason that someone may not want to pay the 2-3% processing fees. It's like, well, if I can just keep everything in Bitcoin, I've already got Bitcoin. It just saves me money. It's like, whether or not I'm into the ideology doesn't really matter. It's just like a more, less friction, more savings. And so I actually do expect the energy industry to grow disproportionately faster than the rest of the global economy.
I have a question. We've done live PBJs maybe 3 or 4 times this year. We love them. One reason we love them is audience questions. Now, typically, when we have the audience ask questions, I think we have confidence we might have some insightful answer or something. In this situation, I think the audience definitely knows more than DK and me. Probably not, you know, I mean, Max is up to speed, but I don't know if we want to do audience questions or...
Well, I think we absolutely should and just see where it goes because it's fun. But before, you guys are not getting off the hook. You came in, and first of all, you're making it seem like you know nothing, Steve. I know you've been researching this stuff for over 5 years, so you definitely don't know nothing. What I'm curious to hear from you guys, like I'm actually more interested for someone who's not living and breathing this 24/7. What were your takeaways? What surprised you? What was interesting? What did you change your mind on?
I was surprised at the confidence and kind of like it felt like everybody thinks it's just some law of gravity that energy is going to be basically 1 cent per kilowatt hour. And I kind of suspect that it's going to get cheaper over time and things are going to be better. But I didn't realize that kind of most people in the industry seem to think that that's just kind of how it is. At least from the panel yesterday.
At least from my friends.
Yeah, maybe it's you just assembled the people who are true believers in that. That was surprising to me.
I mean, but to add to that, I mean, so I was hopeful this event would be like big, ambitious, crazy ideas. It was that. But I was happy with like the, you know, the sophistication and the intelligence and the pragmatism from the people here who are building these things. It actually gave me... It made it seem more real to me. It wasn't, yeah, I guess sort of the pragmatism of it. I knew nothing about doing this stuff in space or ocean, so I went from zero knowledge, or it seemed I would have rolled my eyes previously, and maybe I'll roll my eyes less now. I'm going to like follow it and track it now. And maybe it's a really long-term thing, but it's intellectually, I've gone from rolling my eyes to like intellectually interested in it.
Yes. Yeah. Desalination too. I didn't have any context on that. Met an entrepreneur who's working on taking waste products and turning them into.
Greg, are you still the audience? Okay, good. Greg, I definitely want to shout you. Many people have come to me and said, yo, Greg blew my mind. So I got to get my mind blown too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And I will say, I mean, if anything, like, look, I definitely am one of the more of just like trust the curves, follow the gravity, but it was really exciting and helpful for me because I haven't been like day to day in the industry for a very long time to see the people that are actually like dealing with like the hard parts. Like I have the easy job of just like read some articles, pontificate, trust the curves. But these guys are actually the ones making it happen. And yeah, I felt a lot more confident seeing the caliber of not only intelligence, but just like operational, like people that are like doing the hard crap of knocking on doors, filling out forms, putting metal in the ground.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so given what a success this whole event has been, like, when is this going to be weekly, quarterly, yearly? What's
daily? Now,
Alex is like, not daily.
I'm out, guys.
Yeah. And Alex just put in his 2 weeks notice. No, I mean, look, I think I mentioned you guys on the show before I mentioned Alice. I actually think a great follow up to this some point next year will be, artificial life, because if this digital metabolism and digital ATP thesis is true, like that to me, I think is going to get even more, like we want to bridge build a bridge to more of the AI community, more of San Francisco. Like, I think that's going to get a lot of people excited. And it's this direct tie into the energy thing. So that's the thing I'm most excited about next. That's what I want to start, sort of like dreaming about and see where that leads. I do think we should have more like regular, I don't know if it's like monthly or quarterly, just like dinners or meetups, like the same way that we have like monthly Nostr meetups and stuff, or Bitcoin devs or builder to chat about this. I think that would be really cool. And there are a couple of folks that we might do some very specialized dinner. I know DK is now in the business of planning our dinners. There's a dinner we want to do. There's a dinner we want to do on.
Watch out, we're going to starve.
Yeah, no. Hey, man, I hear fasting is good for you. So metabolism. I think it'd be cool to do, for example, in the space thing. Like, I still know almost nothing about that. That panel was dope. I'm excited to learn more from Calvin and Bob. Like, but like, I don't know. And so it'd be really cool to have, like a mining and space dinner. And there are some of these entrepreneurs that said they wanted to come back for it, which was dope. And, I think we should like an energy dinner or an energy like meetup, space meetup. Yeah.
So if people want to get involved with like an energy dinner or a space meetup, what's the best way? Is there like sign up at Presidio Bitcoin? .org on the
DM at DKSF on Twitter. That's what I'd recommend. No, I mean,
Presidio Bitcoin has a Substack, so
you can subscribe there.
So it'll get announced there on the Substack.
I don't know. There's newsletters.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, it sounds good. Exactly. You can also just email me, max@hivemind.vc. I'm a boomer. I don't do all the social stuff that much, but definitely not on Instagram.
You give out your phone number.
Yeah. 867-5309. We're singing who else is a boomer in the audience.
Yeah, sing it.
All right.
So Steve was soliciting questions, right?
Well, that, and then also, I don't know when lunch is. Oh. So
you're in the way of lunch. But
okay. I didn't know if we were like pressed to wrap up or not. But
Damien's got a quick question.
We should do a couple questions. Yeah.
Thanks for this conference, Max. It was awesome. Really eye-opening. And
thank you for helping, by the way. Shout out to Damien and Oshu. There are a bunch of guys that were really helping all the PB crew. Am I missing anybody?
X-Frog, wizard behind the scenes.
Fucking X-Frog. Hell yeah. X-Frog is always the wizard.
Always there. He's hiding out, but he's coming in strong.
This man always brings the absolute best audio visuals, the best Bitcoiner ethos, and is just like a great vibe to have around always. So thank you, X-Frog.
And we'll have a lot of these talks posted next week. Thanks to Oshu. Where is he at? Somewhere here.
Yeah. Big love to Oshu. That man does. Oh, he's out there chit-chatting. He's not even listening to us. Oshu, what the fuck, bro? But anyways, but he's always clipping our stuff, making us look good. We love that guy.
But I think Damien had a question.
Oh, sorry, Damien.
Max likes to talk.
I do.
Very, very eye-opening and optimistic. But I was just curious how you see this playing out long-term for humanity. I feel like history has a common theme of like, you know, oh, there's this massive forest. We'll just cut down all the trees and now we don't have a forest anymore. We'll suck all the oil dry. So like I like the idea of cheap, abundant energy, But I heard a lot of people say, like, oh, we're just going to pave the moon with solar panels. Like, what does that look like? We have this world of cheap energy, but how can that be done in like a sustainable, prosperous way?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. I'll give my thoughts. I'm curious to hear y'all's thoughts. I mean, I should mention, as Chandra knows, I've been in the sort of environmentalist climate change. You know, that was what originally got me interested in this stuff like 20 years ago. And I still care about that a lot. I mean, I think that we probably can solve some of this through markets, but I'm also open to the idea that maybe that's not the best thing for everything, as much as I was, you know, endorsing Hayek and some of these ideas. What I'll say is this. I think we've swung so far the other way to regulation and sort of sclerotic that we need, you know, I'm partially saying some of the things I'm saying because I think we need a little bit of a counterbalance just to kind of like shock people into like, well, why is it taking 5 years to get a project interconnected? Do I really think we should just like let everything rip? Probably not. There's probably like some middle ground, you know, but I think the pendulum has swung far, far to one way, and we need to kind of reset things. But what I hope happens, you know, I hope we do things with energy. I don't know how we're going to finance it. This is a business, or, you know, and I want to be clear. I'm definitely not anti-commons. I love the commons. I think, unfortunately, government and bureaucracy has just horribly mismanaged with corruption and just fucked over normal people, fucked over the environment in just very deeply harmful ways. But I love the commons. And I think Bitcoin is a commons for money. Noster is a commons for identity and data. And so one of the things I'm very interested in is, what does it look like to have a commons, a stateless socialism? Markets on top of it, of course. But like at the base layer, what does it look like to coordinate ourselves in ways that don't require dudes with guns telling you what to do? And I don't have the answer. I trust that, you know, again, maybe this is where I just have too much faith in the way the universe works. But I think back to Buckminster Fuller, and he talks about how, you know, as humanity evolves, we were given this battery in the ground, and that battery was essentially fossilized dinosaurs, and we burned the hell out of those fossilized dinosaurs. And I don't begrudge that, because burning the fossilized dinosaurs brought us to where we are, and it brought people out of poverty, and it gave us all this cool abundance and stuff around us. But it doesn't mean we have to do it forever. And we've kind of reached the stage where we say, you know, you can't just have white without black. And as you burn this thing, you get the good. But then the dark side of that is, oh shit, we're like causing climate change and like all of this harm to our environment. And I think there's a reason we're jumping to the clean technologies. I don't think it's a coincidence.
I have a question back to you, Damien. Is your question stem from concern over like the timing to move to sustainable energy, or that sustainable, like solar, still requires all these materials that are, you know, unearthed, and is that sustainable?
It's more the second latter piece, that just like, it seems like we have infinite resources on this big planet, but really we don't, and they do end up getting depleted.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair point. Nothing is infinite, right? I mean, like, people say, well, then we moved to space, but nothing is infinite. And so, yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, probably the answer is, like, just learn to be content. But that's a little off-brand for the conference, so.
Consume less energy.
Yeah, I mean, no, look, I'm very much in the camp of the more we harvest energy, the more wealth we create. Generally, that's a good thing. But you're right, if you really take things to the limit, nothing is infinite.
So we need better allocation of resources.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm all for, I agree. Free markets happen to allocate things the best that I know of. So.
Cool. Do you want to chime in? Any other questions or stuff that people wanted to raise? Issues, questions, thoughts, comments?
Jokes. Yeah.
Energy's hot right now. Energy is finally hot.
It's always hot, right? It always gives off heat.
No, it sucked. I'm
talking about heat.
For many generations in Silicon Valley, people were shying away from doing any kind of investment in new hardware, anything deep tech, and even the specialist firms have tried to sort of maintain more or less hard valuation cap on like $10 to $20 million post money, which is like less than a single gas turbine. So how are you ever going to compete with a gas turbine if you can't even get the resources to compete with a single article? And so now there's a huge amount of energy going towards trying to get that energy from hyperscalers, and different people are trying to play, either if they have access to energy, if they're very good pioneers. where do you think it's going to break? Not where the dumb money floods in, because there's a lot of that, but where real capital can be invested in these large scales. Because I'm looking at this and I've been working as hard as I can for my entire career. I'm like, oh, maybe we can just barely catch this wave. But the demand of thirst is like, oh, with unlimited resources, when can you deliver 100 megawatts of power? I'm like, oh, maybe we can, but that's completely different kinds of money than anybody has been providing. And are you just going to skip over us and go to 1980s, 1990s turbine technology? Or is there going to be an opening, maybe for the first time, for something really new? So I just love to hear you.
Well, I mean, I'd love to hear more about what you're doing. It sounds like you actually have more experiences than me, so I'd love to hear your answer. But I think this kind of gets to what DK was saying, which is, you know, I mean, this is not a perfect example because from my understanding, you're doing far more sci-fi than we did. But, you know, with Bright, when we raised a $4 million seed, right? And then we raised project finance and like that was tough to get. And we were very lucky to have, actually I think it was JB Straubel, like one of these like hardcore dudes that just came in with personal money. And he said, you know, basically was like, all right, here's project finance. And maybe, I don't know. I didn't structure it. I wasn't, you know, the founder. So I don't know if there's like warrants on there or how that got done, but you basically needed almost
believer,
philanthropic believer to give you that first project finance. Now, and then from there, once you kind of show it works, then it's much easier to access bank capital or whatever you want. But I do think that, I think that could change. And I think while the hyperscalers are throwing out so much more money, there should be more project finance available, at least on the debt side. I also think though, to be clear, this is kind of the point that I was making to Steve earlier, like, and this is why I would encourage more of the like big thinkers to come, like learn about the Bitcoin community, join our forces. There's a lot of Bitcoin billionaires out there and they're just going to keep getting a lot wealthier and they're open-minded and they're pioneers and they want to see, for the most part, humanity thrive. I actually think that's going to be one of the legacies of Bitcoin is you're going to have, you know, very wealthy people that are willing to underwrite things that more, you know, fiat folks just can't wrap their head around. I'm curious your take. I know we don't normally do.
Oh yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, even back with my previous company, like the limiting reagent was to find an individual billionaire technologist who got nerd sniped into wanting to see how far something could be taken. Doesn't that sound like Bitcoiners? So I think that, you know, that's probably still just essentially the playbook. And then once you have that one or two demonstrators, people are much more willing to dive in. You know, they'll still perceive it as risk. Maybe there's a premium. But it seems really out of equilibrium right now. The specialty energy deep tech folks are like, oh, we're hot right now, but there's a lot of dumb money and we don't want to move on valuation. So we'll just sit. And it just seems like, how can that stay like that? So I think that the pressure to try to manifest something, what I'm working on right now is it's a way to produce power from any kind of chemical or stored fuel, as in hydrogen or nuclear fuel, from fuel to high temperature heat to light to electricity from a band gap matched solar cell. So it's like a miniature Dyson sphere. The reason it's relevant for a big Dyson sphere is, well, you want to basically turn the moon into solar panels and then you can yeet it out much more cost effectively than chemical rockets. And so you have pretty much unlimited source of power from in space and in a sun orbit. As above, so below. Or vice versa. This is pretty crazy stuff, and we're trying to make it work with, you know, just basically indie financing at the small scale. But now there's all of these people who are willing to spend tens of billions of dollars on data centers at hundreds of megawatts or gigawatt scale. And how does an energy technology grab onto that where they want deployments in 2 years, you know, or less? If it's Elon, well, who knows what the actual time frame is? Something like 4 months. I just think whoever can solve this almost impossible, you know, speed gap, it's very difficult. But if you can, it's the biggest wave ever. So,
I'm with you, and I'm definitely love to learn more. It's cool.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you have been very patient. We appreciate all of your questions, attentions. Anything else you guys want to wrap with?
Yeah, this is an amazing event.
If you are a typical PBJ listener, you are going to be surprised that we didn't cover lava.
Next week.
So next week.
I've been focused on this.
I'll...
Thank you.